If you make faulty assumptions, well, you're probably going to get a faulty tower. But when it comes to Kaka'ako, it's anything but funny, according to civil engineer and area resident Ariel Salinas. He's critical of many of the assumptions he says were made by the developer of Honolulu's 801 South Street. The workforce housing structure, the Tower B especially, doesn't pencil out with real-world worker incomes. And Ariel Salinas joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann. Thanks for having me.
Now, your numbers of and sort of a scathing PowerPoint that you've put together and been disseminating paints such a different picture.
Well, that's the thing, is that you mentioned the developer provided the numbers, but we found that the Hawaii Community Development Authority approved these numbers in conjunction with the developer, and the conclusions that they would like you to believe are that a $715,000 condo is affordable by the quote-unquote workforce.
Now, you had to dig to find that number, because if you go online and you look at 801 South Street, there are all the prices for Tower A, which you don't have any problem with. But it's the Tower B numbers that you had to go poking through and try to find to be able to make your case, which you say isn't available to the public, and that this whole notion of what's affordable is really spurious.
And that's exactly correct, is that the Tower B pricing schedule is buried within the developer's permit, which is on the HCDA's website. And you have to really look through about 40 pages of document to find that pricing schedule, and then look through again the 40-page document to find out how they inputted their assumptions into the calculations to arrive at that pricing schedule that was supposed to be affordable for families making between 100 and 140% of the area median income.
Which in real dollars in other places in the country might be pretty good, but you're talking about somewhere between, what, $80,000 and $120,000-ish?
Yes, it's about the upper limit that we're focusing on is about $120,000. And what we've done is we can go through all the calculations, and we can prove using math, using correct values, instead of some of these underestimates or generous omissions that were provided to the developer. We can prove that a family making $120,000, that this new Tower B building is virtually unaffordable for that family.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those assumptions that you say are completely bogus.
Okay.
What's on your list?
So the number one assumption that is absolutely incorrect is the developer and the HCDA is allowing the calculations to be carried out with a 2.9% interest rate.
So that's for a mortgage.
Yeah, for a residential mortgage. And what we've done is we've gone out to local banks and asked the question, what can you qualify me for? And the answer is 5.5%. So that's almost double the figure that the HCDA and the developer are using to calculate the affordability. And that greatly skews the affordability calculation.
Now, when you say you go out and say, what can you qualify me for? You're really using your own numbers. And you, as a family guy who's an engineer and doing pretty well for somebody kind of at the beginning of a career, and you're saying even with your numbers, this is not affordable.
Exactly. And that's what tipped me off to this fraud in the first place was I'm right in the middle of that workforce definition in terms of income, my family household size of four and whatever the income definition is. And we considered, when the first Tower A came up, we looked at the pricing schedule and said, you're not really getting much for your money. And okay, so we'll consider staying where we are in Royal Capital Plaza. But when Tower B came out, that was out of our affordability completely. Like it wasn't even in the realm of affordable. So that's what tipped me off to this whole thing. And then you start looking at it and then you start realizing that the affordability claims are completely spurious in this case. And the justification is they can double the density, double the height of their two towers on that small parcel of land, destroy the advertiser building, and put 11-story parking structures, two of them, because they're supposedly providing all this affordable housing to the workforce. It's really, it was a question of providing for the greater benefit of the community and waiving some of the rules that constrain developers in terms of their profit motive.
You just said about, we don't want people to get upset about this, but destroying the advertiser building, they're going to be keeping the facade in some of the portions that were part of the really old structure.
That's what they claim. There's no written agreement. And there's no actual facts to back that up. That's just a marketing claim at this point, and they're going to be destroying over half of the building to be replaced with an 11-story parking structure.
So you don't believe it?
It's not that we don't believe it. It's that it's at this point there's just no substantiation
to be able to substantiate.
And that's what a lot of the information in the developer's packet is just unsubstantiated, just a number or just a claim. For example, they claim a very low maintenance fee as well of $305 a month for a 2-bedroom unit, which I found that the justification behind that claim was incorrect. And when you actually carry out an apples-to-apples comparison of Tower A versus Tower B, you do the math of what the total operational cost is between the two towers, the real figure that I keep coming out with is about 37% higher than the claimed maintenance fees in that they're claiming for Tower B if you compare them to the ones in Tower A. And the reason why is because there's 410 units in B, 635 in A. So a lot of their claims don't stand up to basic math.
And then there's the whole issue of the parking.
Yes. So they're provisioning 1,700 parking stalls between the two towers, and that's several hundred more than the requirement by the existing Malka area rules for this type of development. And that's just another example of by over-provisioning parking stalls, a developer obviously knows that they can sell this to the residents, and they can rent them out to the community, and they can make money off of it. But in order to provision this many parking stalls, they have to have a separate structure, 11-story high-rise, two of them, just for parking, while normally buildings in Kaka'ako have a parking podium, which a building is built on top of.
So in other words, you have subterranean parking.
The parking is integrated with the building structure. They're not two separate structures. But what that does, it doesn't allow you to sell residential units on, say, the fifth floor or below. So there's a whole, you know, it's a profit motive. It's a financial, you know, they can make more money by building a separate parking structure.
At this point, having talked to them about this and made your case known at the various meetings, including the one on Saturday, there was one on Tuesday that you didn't go to. Are you getting any answer at all from them when you say, hey, I'm showing you my math and I'm telling you I'm a guy who would be your target market and I can't afford your place?
Well, what we're finding is the whole process is geared against having meaningful and valid community input. The whole structure of you get up for 3 minutes at the initial briefing and provide 3 minutes of testimony, and then you're allowed one more session again during the decision-making testimony with the full board of the HCDA present. That structure is just it's geared against having meaningful input. And what we found is that in these supplemental community meetings that the HCDA has held because of all the objection from the community, what we found is that whenever a member of the community gets up to give testimony that's in opposition, the executive director of the HCDA, Mr. Tony Ching, tends to question, tends to provide counterpoint, tends to provide counterexample. And the feeling that we have in the community is that this thing's in the bag, that it was just greased from the top, and that's the perception that this is going to happen at any cost, and they just need to make it legal at any cost.
So what are you going to do now?
Well, on last Saturday, I testified in front of the HCDA executive director, not the board. The board was not present. And after that testimony, Mr. Tony Ching seemed to be a little bit worried about some of the facts that I have that completely expose the affordability of this thing as fraudulent. So he requested a meeting with me, and that's going to happen very soon. And I'm not sure what the purpose of that meeting is, but as far as I know, I'm the only member of the community that Mr. Ching has requested to meet with in regards to any of the testimony provided on this project.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today. We will check in with you and see what happens after that meeting and talk to you again. We'll talk to him too. Thanks again, Ariel.
Thank you for having me, Bethann.
Ariel Salinas is a civil engineer and a Kaka'ako resident with a young family. He's been analyzing what he says is a loophole being exploited in the Kaka'ako-Malka area rules to allow virtually any development scope constraint to be waived under what he says are false pretenses of workforce affordability. We have his PowerPoint. We're going to put it up on our Facebook page and also on the website at hpr2.org.
Support for The Conversation comes from Sacred Hearts Academy, giving 60,000 hours of community service annually and recognized as a school of character by the Character Education Partnership. SacredHearts.org.